You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, have you got your hot tea and honey?
I've got my hot tea and honey.
Well, great. Let me start out this evening by thanking you so much for being my wife, and happy anniversary.
Thank you, and happy anniversary to you, the love of my life.
The best decision I ever, ever, ever made. And I know you keep reminding me of that.
As hey, I well should.
Hey, listen, how tragic are the fires in California? I feel so bad for our dear friends, Bob and Connie Privo, who have most probably lost their home in Paradise, California. We just came back from Europe with them and had an amazing trip. And I'm trying to check in with them, but their voicemail is all filled up. I'm sure with all the hundreds of friends that they have, everybody is worried about them.
Well, I'm sure they are. And that is just a tragedy. That would be our second set of friends who've lost a home in California fires in recent months. But it's not just Bob and Connie. It's really thousands of people up there in Paradise. Over 1,000 structures were burned down.
You know, the whole town
the whole town was burned down.
And you know, Linda, before I met you, I used to have a training facility off Skyway Drive in downtown Paradise. And when we were looking at the news the other day, they showed kind of like that Skyway Drive where the shopping center was, and there was a Safeway, and everything was burned to the ground. I recognized that intersection because on the next block, that's where my old training facility was. And it's just a terrible, terrible thing to experience fires like that.
Well, it is. And we've, you know, been affected by a few ourselves when we lived in California. So my heart goes out to everybody involved. We have the Woolsey Fire and the Camp Fire going on, and there's a few more going on as well. And so many people's homes have been lost, their businesses have been lost.
And a significant loss of life.
And we don't know the end of that yet, because they're still looking for people that are missing.
That's correct. And, you know, it just goes again to show that, you know, when you need to get out, you need to get out. Because I remember when we were up in Lake Arrowhead, when we had those devastating fires up there, and there was only two ways to leave, the 18 and the 330, and those, you know, those roads, which were small roads, clogged right away, and people, they keep forgetting that these fires jump all over the place when there's high winds, and before you know it, it's ahead of you, and you're trapped.
Well, and that's the situation, is that the winds were high, and the fire in Paradise, which is a unique destination, there really is only that one road in and out, and when it was so clogged with people, other people could not get out.
Well, their cars broke down,
right,
and it clogged the roads.
And the smoke gets into the engine, and
exactly,
the cars can't,
they can't
go,
breathe.
And then, yes, and then the car breaks down, and then everybody behind you is affected. So, and it's not, Ron, in this situation, it's not that people didn't get out when they were told. This fire came so fast that they virtually had no warning.
Well, I remember the one up in Lake Arrowhead. Of course, we got evacuated three different times in about 7 years, and twice within 2 years, and we came so close to losing our house, just about a quarter of a mile away, and thanks to God, the wind changed and went in another direction, or we would have lost our house. But the thing that I remember about that is in the Lake Arrowhead fires, the wall of fire was over 250 feet tall, and they said it went through about 60 miles an hour, and some of the people that were there said it sounded like a freight train as it moved through and destroyed, you know, I think we lost 1,400 structures up there.
Yeah. Well, I think that was the case with both of these big fires in California, that they just happened so fast. And I don't know the name of the one that is out there near Thousand Oaks at this point, but that's another one that has burned a lot of structures and just a lot of land. Some of those fires, I know the Woolsey Fire at this point is over 130 square miles that have been burned.
Is that the one that went through Malibu?
Through Malibu,
okay.
Right.
Okay. Does that go to the ocean?
Yes.
That fire?
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. So, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with everybody in California suffering through this. I was a little bit disappointed at President Trump's tweet about withholding money to California for fires. I know he didn't mean that, but it was really a tacky thing to say, and I didn't appreciate it because we've been involved in that. And it's not really anything that the people do, but it is the mismanagement of the forest.
Well,
a lot of it is.
And thanks for bringing that up, because I really wanted to talk about this tonight, because we were watching on television, and that idiot Governor Moonbeam Brown and several other people, all of them idiots, are talking about, well, this is because of climate change, and you know we're going to expect this for 10 to 15 more years, and it's hydrocarbons. No, it's not. Here's what it is. It is the consistent, over the last 15 years, the consistent mismanagement of the timber industry and our state and national forests. It's not climate change. Let me tell you what's happened in California. And you remember some of this because of what we learned in the Lake Arrowhead fires. There was so much underbrush and there was so many dead trees. And of course, one of the things that was horrible about where we lived at the time was the bark beetle infestation that killed, you know, tens of thousands of trees. But the Sierra Club and that type of political environmentalist action committee put a lot of pressure on California government to not go in there and clean out those trees. And let me tell you, here's the worrisome trend that I saw about 15 years ago. And it's not only the state of California, but it's also the federal regulators. And they just made it worse and so much more difficult for professionals who grow and manage and harvest the trees on private lands to do their jobs. Well, one of the things they do with overregulation is they charge them so much money for timber harvesting permits that they just can't do their job. And in California alone, they've lost thousands of timber industry jobs. And last year there was a thing on the unemployment in the timber industry, and it just dropped out, and it was half of what it was just 20 years ago. And so when the timber harvest permits are so expensive, where people that own private timber groves, they just can't afford them. They can't afford to have the people there to cut the trees down and also to grow new ones. And so this exponentially creates a serious problem with the dead, you know, undergrowth and the dead trees. You can't move them out. And when a fire strikes, it burns so hot, Linda, that it literally sterilizes the ground and makes it, if not extremely difficult, impossible for new growth to take place.
Well, at least not for a number of years. And I agree with you that the forestry industry in California has been terribly mismanaged for a long time. And you can go through a lot of the forest and you see the trees that are devastated by the bark beetle. And those trees need to be removed because those are the ones that are going to go up first in a flame. So it is, I do think that a lot of it is the state of California just totally mismanaging. I agree with President Trump there totally, because we lived in it and we were affected by it ourselves.
Well, you know, they'll spend billions of dollars on a bullet train to nowhere.
Yeah.
Billions. And billions more, I think 22 more billion dollars on illegal aliens and government subsidies for illegal aliens, and they will not, buy the infrastructure that we need to fight these devastating forest fires. We should have an entire fleet of air tankers instead of leasing them from Canada, right? We should have more hotshot teams, more rapid deployment teams, more bulldozers, and more money to manage our state and the federal government to manage their national forests.
Well, the problem has been consistently that California is behind the problem and not in front of it. And therefore, when a fire does happen, they are just unprepared to be able to handle it properly. This is a tragedy for so many people, Ron. And again, you know, my heart goes out to them all. And, you know, just hopefully they find all, if not most, of those people that are currently missing and find them, you know, with relatives or friends and, you know, out of harm's way, because this really was a tragedy.
And, you know, our thoughts and prayers out for Bob and Connie Prevost. We know they're safe. We had a discussion with them on the phone the other day, but I don't even think they know whether their home survived or not, but most probably not.
Well, and other things to talk about, you know, we can't ignore the elections. Basically, the elections are still going on sometime after the elections actually happened.
It's been a few days now.
Well, it's been a week now, and it's still going on. And this is really, you know, the people are tired of this, and they want it to be over, and it's not over. And we have more bad behavior, as usual. So in Florida, we have recounts because the votes keep changing. And you have the Brenda Snipes there in Broward County, who just keeps coming up with votes from all kinds of interesting places. You have lawyers on the Democratic side who think that votes from non-citizens should count. You have just a lot of irregularities happening that are against the laws of Florida, but they're happening anyway. So,
well, you know, the thing that bothers me is I listened to, you know, Governor Rick Scott, who, of course, is embroiled in his own election, you know, campaign
for Senate, sure.
Issues. And I think it's like 1.6 or 0.16%. It's ridiculous. You know, we're talking about hundreds or thousands of votes separate him from you know, his competitor Nelson, who's been there for like 42 years. But you know, this woman, Brenda Snipes, you know, why Governor Scott, when he had an opportunity, did not step in and investigate Brenda Snipes is far beyond me. And now he's paying a price for that.
Well, she has all kinds of things against her in irregularities in voting. And I agree with you. I don't know why she's still in that position, other than that voters keep electing her to that position, which I don't understand why that happens either.
Well, there needs to be an audit, you know, of her agency. Meaning, you know, let's take care of business. Let's see if they're following procedures. They're clearly not. Let's find out if there's malfeasance in office, because I do believe that if there's malfeasance, a person can be removed and they can certainly be recalled.
Yeah. Well, and then we have the election, which just settled in Arizona, where
McSally,
Kyrsten Sinema, won the election. And, you know, I know that McSally conceded that. I can't help but think, Ron, after a week, that there's just something not right. There, something doesn't smell right to me. McSally has conceded, so I guess that's a done deal. But boy, I'll tell you, you know, she was leading the race the entire way until, again, just like Florida, until the tail end. It just doesn't feel right. And do you notice that doesn't happen on the reverse? It doesn't happen on the Republican side.
I can't think of a single time where it has.
So I don't know. This just, there's just so much irregularity in these elections. And when they go on for this long, that really makes me rethink. And I don't think I'm the only one who thinks that way. I think a lot of the American populace feel the same way that I do, that something is rotten in Denmark here. And the other race is, of course, in Georgia for the governor, where Stacey Abrams will not concede that race, even though at this point she has clearly lost the race. And she would have to be, or I should say her opponent would have to be under 50% for that to go to a recount. He
Correct.
Is not under 50%. He
Correct.
Is over 50%. Slightly over, but still over.
Well, to me, that's a done deal, and she's just going to hold out, but she's going to ultimately lose that election.
Well, and yes. So unless there's some more mysterious votes that show up from somewhere, who knows? This is a very odd election season, and I'm uncomfortable about it. I think a lot of America is uncomfortable about it. I think we are weary and worn out from this election cycle. And no sooner do the Democrats find out that they've won the House than they've got plans for something like 85
subpoenas
against the president.
This is not going to end. And you know what? We are going right into the 2020 elections. We're not even going to get an opportunity to catch our breath. This is not going to stop. You know, they're already picking on Attorney General, the acting Attorney General, just appointed by President Trump, Matthew Whitaker. They're already calling for him to recuse himself in the Mueller investigation. And this is just going to go on and on and on.
Well, they're not only calling for him to recuse himself, for which there is no reason for him to do so. Even Rosenstein likes and respects him. Well, Chuck Schumer is going to tie into the bill on the spending bill protections for the Mueller investigation, which is just ridiculous. One has nothing to do with the other, but this is kind of like extortion, in my opinion.
Well, what they are worried about is now that Whitaker is the acting AG, that he is going to quash future funding for that investigation. You know, my personal opinion is, and I've said this all along, and so have you, this investigation's a big nothing. Okay, they wasted, you know, tens of millions of dollars. This investigation's been going on a year and a half, and Mueller just is just running around trying to, you know, cast spaghetti against the wall to see anything that will stick, and really nothing's sticking. I made a bet with a very prominent attorney. You know him I won't mention his name, but he's in Chicago. And we had dinner with him, you know, in San Diego. And I bet him, and he's a big Democrat, and I bet him a steak dinner, the best steak dinner in all of Chicago, if they can find one single salient thing wrong, a connection between the Russians and President Trump. And he took me on. So we'll see where that goes.
Well, Schumer's just making something out of nothing. And this is because Whitaker has felt all along that this was a witch hunt and it was not an investigation that ever should have happened.
And you know what? It's okay for him to say that, too.
Sure.
Even as the acting attorney general. That's his legal opinion. He's a prominent, well-known attorney, and he can have an opinion on that.
Well, sure, you don't recuse everybody who has their own opinion. But, you know, the other thing about this is this has gone on way too long. We heard months ago that this was going to be over by July, by August, by September, and here we are, still on and on and on, and we are over it. This needs to be done.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to responsetoactiveshooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, responsetoactiveshooter.com, and be safe out there.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American freestyle bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Well, you know, Lynn, these elections with these close races, to me, underscores that America continues to be divided.
Extremely divided, yes.
And, you know, during the course of the election, there was something that you and I did not like whatsoever because it was very disrespectful, and that was the Saturday Night Live so-called comedian Pete Davidson being disrespectful towards retired Navy SEAL and Congressman-elect Dan Crenshaw from the Republic of Texas.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, Congressman-elect Crenshaw lost his eye from an IED in Afghanistan on his third deployment, and he wears a patch. And so Davidson, you know, took some time to basically say some, you know, disrespectful comment about him, and then said, well, you know, he lost it in the war or whatever, right?
Right.
And, you know, having just gone through Veterans Day, that really hit me personally. And but just to show you what kind of guy Congressman-elect Crenshaw is, I guess Saturday Night Live reached out to him to do a show, and so Davidson could apologize because he really needed to walk that back. He took a lot of heat for that. And Crenshaw did a little comedy routine and accepted his apology, and I actually thought it was pretty funny.
Well, he did, and he also made sure to tell people to never forget. And that if you're a veteran, that's implying that as an American, you're in it with them. You know, the interesting thing is that Pete Davidson would even say that when he lost his own dad in 9/11.
Yeah, that was just a comment, you know, that, I mean, the guy should have been squared away, and he really wasn't. And to make light of anything like that just shows me that some of these people, these celebrities, they just live in this bubble, and they are just not where the people of the United States are.
No, they're not. And, you know, it's in so many different instances, but they really and truly are not living in the same world that most of America lives in. You know, what worries me about this election is that places like Arizona went Democrat. Nevada went Democrat.
Well, they're talking about Texas going purple, for God's sakes.
Well, and that's scary. And, you know, the demographic of the voters actually surprised me a bit, that the big conversation was about the young voters, right, and that they were going to vote Democrat. But you know what? A lot of the young voters did not vote. So it was really not those 18-year-old to 25-year-olds that made the big difference in the elections. Of course, the older generation seemed to go far more Republican. I think that's because they're a little older and wiser. They've got a few more years. Well, they understand how
yes.
it works.
Yeah, well, there's some context about life. They understand life. They've lived a hard life. That they've lived some good times. But recently, until President Trump was elected, there was a lot more bad times. And I mean, even under the Bush administration, there wasn't very much good times economically for this country. And we were getting screwed left and right on trade deals, both in Europe and Mexico and Canada and China with Japan. I mean, you name it. And things are finally starting to turn around. What I'm going to be interested in is how we journey forward between now and the 2020 election.
Well, and it's going to be more difficult because Trump is going to be distracted by all these things that the Democratic Congress is going to be throwing at him with impeachment and subpoenas and investigations. But I continue to believe that Trump will go around that and try to accomplish the things that he needs to, because that's who he is. And Ron, this is one thing for me that is so important. We moved ahead in the United States these last 2 years because we have a businessman, because we have a non-politician, because we have somebody who understands economy and money and how to play the game with other people. Either our allies or our competitors in the world have played it much better than we have. And therefore, it has hurt Americans. If America could hang with him for another 4 years, starting in the 2020 election, I just think we could move America so far forward. Yet now you have Hillary Clinton again coming out of the woodwork, going everywhere like a candidate, which is concerning to me because I just can't bear to see her again.
Well, you know, okay, I don't know if you and I are going to disagree on this, but, you know, I can't stand Hillary Clinton. Every single time I see her on TV, the hair on my neck, you know, gets up. But I'm kind of hoping she runs for president in 2020 because there's a lot of people in her own party that don't like her. And I think she's delusional. You know, just today she was on television and now her thing was like, well, I'm a victim because she's constantly a victim.
Oh, she's
right?
A victim, right?
I'm a victim because too many people thought that I was going to get elected. Well, wait a minute. You're the person out there telling everybody to elect you, and you're trying to call yourself a victim?
Right.
This is one confused woman, and I hope she runs because I think she'll split the ticket.
Well, I don't know what I think. It's too early for me to think anything yet. I just know that I can't bear to see her out there again on TV and everything for another 2 years because she is, to me, the woman should be in jail. She's despicable. She's dishonest. And she has an agenda that is not good for America.
Well, I think if she does run, the Republicans get another shot at her with regards to investigations. Two can play that game.
You know what? Speaking of investigations, I am so curious who's going to end up as the Attorney General.
Well, I was really hoping for Trey Gowdy.
But I was too.
And you know what? A lot of police officers that I know and a lot of attorneys I know are all hoping for Trey Gowdy, but I don't hear a single thing from him. Not a peep. So that kind of worries me.
Well, and that could be on purpose too. You know, it could be that President Trump is floating these other names like Chris Christie.
I don't want him to be the Attorney General. I'm not a fan. I think the guy's got more baggage than a Samsonite factory.
Yeah, well, a lot of the names that have been floated do. So I'm still hoping for Trey Gowdy, but he has floated a few other names.
Oh, the female judge, that female federal judge, I think from the Washington, D.C. District, United States District Court, she sounds like she's been interviewed, and, you know, you can punch a lot of tickets there.
Yeah, I may be okay with that, but I just want somebody strong. And I want somebody to really uphold our rule of law. And I want somebody to prosecute the people that are doing wrong, because there is so much corruption in Washington, so much corruption in the courts, that I just want to see the swamp drained.
And I don't want to see the United States Department of Justice and the FBI continue to be mired down in all of this controversy. The Bureau's reputation is in the cellar, as far as I'm concerned right now. That whole seventh floor has been a huge problem, and they're going to pay the price for that. They've been paying the price, and what we really need, I'm with you, what we really need in that United States Department of Justice as the top law enforcement official, as Attorney General, is a strong and serious doer and not a talker.
Right, we do. And what else we need right now, since we have a lame duck Congress right now, we need that lame duck Congress to take these 2 months and do some things while we have the majority and get to work and do it right now.
Well, you know, Lynn, we were just talking about Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker. And within 24 hours of him being appointed by President Trump as acting AG, he has already fulfilled the president's ruling by executive order preventing any new illegal alien who tries to breach our border and is captured from ever applying for asylum. And it's about time.
Well, that is the least we could do, and it's a step in the right direction. I think we have a long way to go, but boy, we've taken a step.
Well, I think you were talking with me this afternoon with regards to the people that are getting captured every day in comparison to who is coming across on the border.
Well, you know, we're talking about this 4,000 person caravan coming our way. And yes, it's an invasion, but the truth is the invasion is much, much bigger than this. Just in October, the Border Patrol arrested 23,121 migrant family members, the highest one-month total ever recorded crossing our border.
And, you know, they've got to detain these people the way that it is. With, you know, catch and release, they detain them for at least around 20 days in these holding facilities. I mean, if you think about, we've been dealing with this for months and months and months. These detention facilities must be huge.
Well, when you add the family unit arrests to other arrests like single adults and unaccompanied minors, the total number of people caught trying to cross the southwest border illegally in just the month of October this year, Ron, was 51,000 people, or 1,700 a day.
That's just absolutely ridiculous. And when you listen to some of these Democratic politicians that were saying, and even President Obama, oh, there's nothing to worry about. You know, that caravan is, you know, a couple of hundred miles away. Well, no, not the way that you're talking about it. There's thousands of people a month that are breaching our borders that we have to take into custody and then try to do something with.
Well, and this is 51,000. That is a number that is mind-boggling. I can't say that enough times. 51,000 just in that month. So multiply that over the months. Now, that was a high month, but a low month isn't a lot lower than that.
Well, I think you were saying, you know, last week when we were talking, you were saying like about an average of about 1,000 people a month.
A day.
And so that's right. 30,000 a month on average.
But now we're at 1,700 a day.
That's crazy.
So, and, you know, speaking of that caravan, somebody took the LGBT people in that caravan and gave them a ride to the border. So they're already at the border. So, I mean, this is just more people on top of these 51,000 that are coming across the border. The problem is staggering. You never hear these figures on the news.
Well, I am so glad that President Trump made the executive order and said, look, if you sneak across the border and we catch you, you will never be able to apply for asylum. And I'm down with that. I am seriously down. And, you know, as I talked about before, this whole controversy about, you know, you come across the United States illegally and you have a baby inside the United States and all of a sudden that baby becomes an American citizen, that crap has got to stop.
Well, I agree with you. But here's another staggering figure that just in 2018, over a 500,000 arrests have been made at the border, and people denied border crossings. So 500,000. Yes, it dwarfs that 4,000, but that's just an addition, and we don't need any of this. So we need, as America, to build that wall. It is absolutely critical. And when you and I drive across the country, we see portions of the wall. And some places it's good, and other places it's ridiculous. I could walk over it.
Right. No, I absolutely agree with you. The southern border of Texas is, in some areas, just a disgrace.
Well, just Texas. It's Arizona.
Well,
it's,
we go through all those areas. You know,
New Mexico.
Yeah. It's nuts. And they have to allow our president to fulfill that mandate of the American people and build this wall. We have no other protections but that in the Border Patrol. And the Border Patrol is so understaffed. And I'll tell you what, the men and women of the Border Patrol, Boy, I tell you, they've got my 1,000% support.
Yeah, me too. And one more thing, as far as the demographic of the people coming over the border, it used to be a lot of Mexican nationals. Now, 56% are Central Americans that are coming over the border.
Well, the thing that bothered me as well is now they're getting some Indonesians, they're getting some Somalis, they're getting a lot of people from the Middle East, and that's where you go to your high-risk terrorist nations sneaking across that border, and you know there's going to be another 9/11. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, and yeah, because we just have no protection at the border, and we absolutely need to get this wall built. I'm really worried about Congress being there. They're the ones that handle the money for this, and now it's a Democratic Congress, and they're never going to agree to it. So we've got to find some alternative methods to this.
I agree. Well, as you know, President Trump was recently in France, and the French president made some comments, I'm not going to use the word derogatory, but I think offensive comments, calling President Trump a nationalist, and, you know, with nationalism being more towards something very negative.
Right, he uses it as a dirty word.
Right, and it shouldn't be a dirty word at all. As a matter of fact, President Trump is very proud of the fact that he sees himself as a president of the United States with a nationalistic attitude. And to me, nationalism means America first, and let's take care of our own first, and let's move America forward as a nation. It is nothing like socialism or anything from the Nazi regime and that era in the, you know, the 20s through the 40s. Being a nationalist, in my opinion, is a very good thing, and we should all be nationalists.
We should all be nationalists. It's, in my opinion, equivalent to being patriots. They need to stop putting the word white in front of it to try to make it be something evil.
Yes.
Here are people that are taking a word and trying to make it be something that it's not. And this happens a lot in our society where they take words and all of a sudden you can't even say them anymore because they're supposed to mean something that they really don't mean. And the everyday American out there just living their life and doing their job, they don't have those nefarious thoughts in their mind when they say that Americans are nationalists. They want Americans to be for America first.
And that should transcend race, creed, religion, culture. We are all one people. We might be divided, you know, politically on some things, but we should all be Americans first. And when you compare and contrast that against this French president, who's only got about a 30% rating, and I think he's going to be running for his life in the next election, to be honest with you. But when you look at the thousands of American soldiers that are still buried in France from World War I and World War II, and the French government has a history of going to bed with anybody, even during World War II, they had the Vichy government, which was a Nazi collaborative government of France. They thank God they had Charles de Gaulle to come in there and defeat the Vichy as well as the Nazis. It was one and the same thing. And for this president, with all of those American dead that came over to help them, all of our nationalist soldiers that came over to help the French, I tell you what, I couldn't be more pissed off with something like that. And I'm glad that President Trump put him in his place. This French president doesn't think about nationalism for France. What he thinks about is sort of a European nationalism. And let me tell you something, that's not going to work.
Nope, it's not.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, I got my last hot cup of tea with honey, and I'm going to steal one of your ideas, if you don't mind.
I don't mind, but just speaking of stealing, Dr. Martinelli...
What? You're going to talk about the jacket, aren't you?
I was given a beautiful
PBR
World Finals jacket at the PBR World Finals, and it seems to be missing.
Because it was way too big for you, and it looked dumb, and it looked just great on me, and I noticed it was a unisex jacket, so I stole it. Oh. And it's been so cold since we've been back in Texas that I'll tell you what, it's fantastic. I was walking the dog today, and I put that jacket on, and it was windy and cold, and I felt just great in that jacket.
I would not know. I haven't even been able to put it on.
Look at it as a anniversary gift to your husband.
Oh.
Hey, listen, I want to steal one of your ideas. I love it when you come up with these lists. Okay, so I found the list from a site called Thrive Global, and it's 13 things that you should give up if you want to be successful. And because, my darling, you are the most successful businesswoman I know, I thought I'd try these out on you and get some feedback from you. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, so these are 13 things that you got to give up if you want to be successful. So number one, and I think you'll agree with me, is give up that unhealthy lifestyle.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, drinking, smoking, going out and partying, probably overeating, you know, okay. Things like that. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I guess I would agree, just because, yeah, all of that would detract from what you would be trying to accomplish. You can only do so many things, and you can't be distracted by all these other things. So, yeah, an unhealthy lifestyle would not be conducive to you getting up and getting in and hitting it every day, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, you know, you got to be able to fly with the eagles, okay?
And soar with the eagles, or what's the other? I don't
walk around with the turkeys.
Oh, I don't know. Okay.
No. Anyway, number two, don't have a short-term mindset. Think long-term instead.
You know, not only think long-term, actually, I agree and disagree with that. You have to have a short-term mindset to get some things done. So you've got to have very short-term goals. I've got to do this, I've got to do this, I've got to do this in a day, right?
Didn't you read a book? You were bragging about some book that you read. Was it called The 12-Week? What was that?
Yeah,
book
that
about?
Has something. I don't remember the name.
Having a plan that goes out for about 12 weeks.
Yeah, and that's good. So instead of a long-term yearly plan, you plan in increments of 12 weeks so that you can accomplish those things. When everybody's different, Ron. For some people, that long-term plan works well. For me, not so much.
And me neither. I have a 1-year plan, a 2-year plan, and a 4-year plan.
Yeah, see, I don't even have that.
Okay.
But I do work in smaller increments because I can get a lot more done, and I can realize that I've accomplished more, and then I can add and set new goals, and that works for me. So I would say with that one, that that's not a one-size-fits-all type of an approach.
Okay.
I think everybody is different, and whatever works for them to accomplish things is what is the right thing for them to do.
Well, you know, there was an example in this site that sort of resonated with me. And the example was, don't work out for that summer body. Work out because that's who you are. Right? And I think you and I decided before New Year's, right, far before New Year's, that our resolution was going to be that we came back from a professional bull riding competition, that we were going to, you know, get into our healthy lifestyle again and do some dieting and exercise because it just makes us both feel better and allows us both to focus in on work.
Well, that's absolutely true. It does make you feel better. It gives you more energy. And when you have more energy, you can accomplish more and your mindset is better. So I absolutely agree with that.
Well, let me try another one out with you. And that is, give up on playing small, go big or go home.
You know, that one I truly agree with. People need to stop thinking small. It costs you the same mentally to think big as it does small. And people do, for the most part, tend to think small. And somebody taught me that some time ago, and they kept saying, Linda, think bigger. And I would say something bigger. And they say, nope, think bigger. And now it's second nature to me, and I love it because it gives you unlimited possibilities, and it allows you to really realize the potential of everything that can be done. Will you succeed at everything? No. But thinking big is so much more fun than thinking small.
Well, you know, there's something that you tell our kids, two of our kids, you know, and they're both boys, and that is, don't ever be afraid to fail, and don't be afraid to succeed.
Well, being afraid to fail is one thing, and that's not a bad thing. You can't be terrified to fail so that you're frozen. But some people truly are afraid to succeed, Ron, and they don't know what would happen if they succeed.
You know, that's so strange because that type of thought never occurred to me, but you've mentioned that before.
Sure, and it's a lot of people feel that way. And you know what? The beautiful thing is that these kinds of feelings can be switched on and off in your mind if you really can get control of your mind, just like that big thinking. Think big, think globally. Instead of just what's in front of your face, think wider. Just picture a little tiny circle and just expand it. And that is thinking big.
Now, here's something. Number four is something that you and I both agree on. And I know I learned this from the military and law enforcement, and that is, give up your excuses. Stop making excuses. Move forward. Press forward.
Well, that's a good one that I also agree with. You know, excuses to me sound really lame when I give them or when I receive them. I don't like excuses. Apologies are okay when things don't happen, but not an excuse. If something doesn't happen right, apologize for it. But don't make yourself an excuse because you look bad.
Let me try out number five on you, and that is, give up your fixed mindset. I know you're big on that.
Well, I think that almost goes with that global thinking and the big thinking. Yeah, you can't have a fixed mindset. You have to be open to new ideas and new things that come along because the world changes and it's an ever moving target. So you have to change all the time. You just have to be willing to change with the world.
Rule number six I want you to help me with, because you're on a different level business-wise than I am, and I bow to your expertise. Give up believing in the magic bullet. What do you think that means, Lynn?
Give up, what is it, Ron?
Believing in the magic bullet.
Oh, absolutely agree with that. There is no magic bullet. There's no one thing that's going to get you, you know, exactly what you want. That is the thing. People who hit that, it's like hitting a slot machine. You know, it happens from time to time, but the odds are way against you. It takes hard work, good planning, hard work.
Yeah, and stick-to-itiveness,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
You got to be tenacious.
Persistence. People give up too soon. Most people give up way too soon, and they don't have the belief in themselves. Listen, everybody who is successful has failed, and they didn't get successful by a magic bullet. They got successful by persistence and hard work. continuing to invest in your own growth and your own education in whatever you're doing.
You know, a guy that I truly respect, and I know a lot of Americans respect him, he's the guy, The Rock, you know, the wrestler that's become a wonderful movie star. And he said, had I never failed in my life, I would have never achieved the success that I have today.
Well, I absolutely agree with that.
Yep. Let me give you another one. Number seven, give up on your perfectionism. You know, nothing will ever be perfect, no matter how hard you try.
Well, I also agree with that, is that nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes, and it's by those mistakes that we learn. If you were perfect, you would be supernatural. You would be a god. There is no perfect human being, and there is no perfection. But the imperfections are things that can be learned from and grown from and reflected upon and move forward from.
And you know, a perfectionist, and I've seen these people before, perfectionists don't tend to get along well with other people when they are supervisors because they're over demanding. And I mean, it's okay to have good demands on staff, but by becoming a perfectionist and focusing on that, you miss a lot of the little things that I really think, you know, achieve success.
Well, I agree, but I also don't think that it's a bad thing to strive for perfection.
No, that's fine. I'm
that's
not saying
that. That's a different
that.
Thing than being
absolutely.
A perfectionist.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You just don't want to micromanage. And I think that some people that are perfectionists tend to not have confidence in staff, right? They don't work with staff to kind of build up to their expectations, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and you know what? If you are a perfectionist, and we all fail at some time, that failure would hit you very hard. Where if you realize that you're not a perfectionist and you fail at something, you just pick up and go on. And that's much easier. It's a much easier way to live.
No, I agree with you. Now, here's one that I'm going to disagree with, and I want to hear what your thoughts are. It's number eight, give up on multitasking. Now, I happen to be a multitasker, so I wouldn't want to give up on that, but I just would, and I'll tell you what, you are a multitasker. You have so many, you know, balls in the air that, and you do very well with managing every one of those, but I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
You know, this is a thing I think, again, I am a serious multitasker, and it is who I am. So if you were to try to change me to be something else, I would be less successful. So again, I think that this is not something for everybody. I think it's a personal way in which everybody is different. So it is the way that I work. It's the way that you work. Although you are much better at focusing on one thing for a long period of time than I am. I seriously need to multitask. But you know, it's worked well for me, Ron, and your way has worked well for you. So I think that that's an individual trait, that whatever works well for people.
Well, you know, the only thing, and I will tell you a weakness I have, and of course I don't have to tell you, you already know it, but sometimes you can lose focus. If you multitask a little too much, it becomes distracting, and you can lose focus.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that gets worse when you start getting older. And I notice for me personally, at this age, I have to really, really work to stay on focus and multitask, where before it wasn't a big deal for me.
Well, you do a great job at it.
Well, you're very nice. All right, so here's number nine. Give up on your need to control everything. Detach yourself from things you can't control.
You know, that is something I agree with, and it's a very hard lesson to learn. That has been a very hard lesson for me because I do want to control what's around me and what's happening. I do want to strive for things to be the best that they can be. But I have learned in a lot of areas in life to let go of things I can't control and just mentally walk away from them. And I kind of call it like a little filing system in my brain, where I compartmentalize that thing that I can't control, and I just put it over here and I don't think about it. And I think about the things that I can control and that I can do well with. And that is a good lesson for people. Hard to do.
Well, you know, one of the things that I learned a long time ago, and of course I teach this to police officers in our de-escalation classes, because it's easy for them to get jacked up, you know, when a subject that you're working with is crazy or yelling at you or threatening you. I said, look, you can only control yourself. Okay, you can't seek to control others. You can only control yourself. So do a good job, control yourself emotionally, control your focus, and then just be tenacious on de-escalating and trying to get that person calmed down.
Well, you know, and you know? That's a really good point. And another point about that is you cannot control other people for the most part.
Right.
So, or situations. But if you do control your own behavior, you're much more likely to change the behavior of the person that you want to change.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that.
So,
yes.
So that there's a big lesson there in controlling your own self and your behavior and the way you react to things, and you may just get what you want from the other person.
Agreed. So number 10, give up on saying yes to things that don't support your goals.
Another really hard one. That's a really hard one, but absolutely agree with that. You have to learn to say no. And no is a hard word for some people. It was a hard word for me for a very long time. I know it's a hard word for a lot of women, Ron. I don't think men so much, but for women, no is a hard word. We are people-pleasing kind of people. That's in our DNA. So it's important to learn to say no. And don't say yes to things that don't support your goals or people that don't support you as a person.
I absolutely agree. And here's one that you and I are going to agree with because we practice this every once in a while. Give up on toxic people, negative people, naysayers, people that bring you down.
Well, absolutely. We made that agreement between ourselves many years ago that we were not going to have toxic people in our lives. And therefore, it doesn't mean that you shun them. It doesn't mean that you have nothing to do with them. What it means is that you pretty much just avoid them as much as possible. And that has worked out well. Totally agree with that.
Yeah, and stay with positive people. And I think that's really helped us.
Yes.
Make sure everybody around you is positive and don't let people bring you down. Number 12, give up on your need to be liked.
Yeah, that's a good one. I agree with that one.
And the last one, give up on wasting time. And I know that's a weakness with me every once in a while. I find myself being diverted and I waste a little time, but that's not your problem because you are a go-getter.
I am not a time waster.
There is not a second in your life that I've ever seen you waste.
No, that's probably true and to a fault. But I like the suggestions. They're good. And I, for the most part, agree with them for helping people be more successful in all areas of their life, not just business.
Yeah, that's right. And these are things, really, somebody should just take this list and post it up on the wall and just kind of remember this. And this is one strategy in allowing people to become more successful.
Yep.
And as we finish our coffee tea conversation
on our anniversary.
On our anniversary, let me tell you that how wonderful it has been to be married to you and to share all the wonderful things that you and I do together. We are two people running around with our hair on fire, and our kids hate us.
No, our kids love us, but no, it's, you know what? It's been a really, really good marriage, Ron, and you know, let's just continue what we're doing.
And go on the journey. I love you, sweetheart.
I love you too.